Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, coming to you live from SiriusXM headquarters in New York City. Happy Leap Day! This is the day we're supposed to do something different, something you never do. We'll get to that. As if we really needed to add another day to this news year, the never-ending news year already. Since we last spoke and brought you the exclusive text messages in the Fannie Willis story, this time yesterday, the rest of the media is playing a serious game of catch-up. Just minutes before we went to air, CNN finally updated its reporting to not only reflect that this story, its story on the texts between Ashley Merchant and Terrence Bradley, which we read to you in full yesterday, was not, quote, an exclusive, as they had posted on their website last night, hours after we had broken it, but finally added after I publicly shamed them on X for not mentioning that we had broken it, added, quote, Megyn Kelly first reported the texts Wednesday afternoon on her SiriusXM show. So I gotta say, CNN, good for you. I publicly shamed you, but it's fine. You did the right thing in the end, so I forgive you. It only took the public shaming in 14 hours, but right on, right on. It's none, we'll take what we can get. As of yet, right now, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, nothing. They committed the same sin, and they haven't updated their reporting. So, on you, because AJC, I've cited you repeatedly. When you break news that I could go down to the courthouse and pull the brief myself on so I don't have to cite you, I still cite you. Why do I do that? Because it's a professional courtesy in journalism. That's why I don't like you any more than you like me. I do it because it's a professional courtesy, and you need to update your reporting because I deserve the same in return. So, okay, moving on. Right now, some of the biggest media outlets in America are completely ignoring the bombshells. That's the New York Times, Washington Post, many others. Just, it didn't happen. It's like Terrence Bradley, they viewed him as a dud the other day. They don't care about the impeachment with his prior inconsistent statements with the texts. They didn't care to look at the text to see how this guy completely confirmed that there was an affair before these two officers of the court testified there wasn't. All of it just remains uncovered, and you know exactly why. On top of all this, late yesterday, the Supreme Court announced it is taking up former President Donald Trump's immunity case. Wow. Mike Davis was right. Our pal Dave did not get that one right. We'll talk to them about it when they come on later. Not today, but tomorrow. Meaning Donald Trump very well may have pulled the inside straight we've been talking about. The inside straight he needs to beat these criminal cases, all four of them, or stall them until after the November election. Folks, it's happening. It caused an epic meltdown. You're going to be shocked when you hear who it's from. Keith Olbermann, he got upset. He's upset again. And he is labeling everyone on the Supreme Court, well, just about everyone, whores. The whores.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
Here to discuss it all in person for the first time are pals from the Fifth Column, Camille Foster, Michael Moynihan, and Matt Welsh. Find all of their work at wethefifth.substack.com. Com. Hi, guys.
Howdy.
Hi.
Thanks so for having us.
Great to see you.
Great to see you.
This is so
in
fun.
Person, yes.
Look at us in director's chairs at the Sirius headquarters. I guess we should just kick it off with Olbermann. I have so much goodness for you guys teed up. I've got all your favorites.
I believe it.
You
the
know
Olbermann and the View, too. I hope there's going to be some View.
You got
and Harry. Do we have Prince Harry?
We've got, and there's one other. Who else do I sometimes play? And you guys are like, him? I'll give you a clue. We once talked about how he was allegedly riding down the street.
Chris Cuomo.
Chris Cuomo.
Yeah, he's coming out of the basement.
It's a fifth column All-Stars. So we begin with Keith Olbermann, who we're adding to our repertoire, justifiably so. Take a watch.
Oh, no. The conservatives on the Supreme Court are Trump's whores. Chief Justice Roberts is a Trump whore and he can burn in hell. And Justice Alito is a Trump whore and he can burn in hell. And Justice Gorsuch is a self-contradicting Trump whore and he can burn in hell. And Justice Kavanaugh is a drunken abuser Trump whore and he can burn in hell. And Justice Barrett is a handmaid Trump whore and she can burn in hell. They are corrupt.
Wow.
They have corrupted the Supreme Court. We will have to remove them from the Supreme Court or create a replacement for the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Oh.
That's
excellent. It's a good plan.
Yeah, I think
that's that's when the whores come in.
He's mentally ill, by the way.
Yeah,
there's something wrong with him. I mean, every time I see him, I thought he disappeared. He used to have a show on television. I don't know if the people remember that, but it was the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
And the irony was it was always him.
It was always.
And no one really got that. Yeah. And so, but now he's going to cancel the Supreme Court. Yeah, I can't believe that. He has a podcast? Is that true?
Yes.
Oh. I guess they let anyone have podcasts, Michael.
Yeah, we shouldn't be platforming him, Megan.
Because we have to. Listen because we have to.
Yes,
we get clips like that gold. The whores. That's where the whores come in.
I'm surprised you didn't find a way to like inappropriately fold in Katie Turr.
He
did it again just the other day.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you remember we discussed the first meltdown about her where he's like, she asked me to write her book. I used to edit her columns and her pieces.
Yes.
Doubled down with the same story last week.
Yeah, it's an obsession.
It was because, you know why? Because Katie Turr's sin was questioning whether the $450 million judgment against Trump was fair. Is it fair? She wasn't saying it's not.
Yeah.
Both of her panelists were like, yes, it's fair.
Of course.
Because she asked the question, he resurrected, he is a sick man.
He's like,
both former FBI prosecutor panelists on MSNBC.
Yes.
That's all they have.
Yes.
Like, they bring a new one every day. Oh, I'm a former FBI prosecutor, and we shouldn't have the First Amendment. And by the way, Donald Trump should pay $1 billion for making up.
I do appreciate one thing about Keith Olbermann is that in that clip, he said, usually you have all the way back to FDR to pack the court when you're not getting your New Deal stuff through. Pack the court. Now we've had more conversations about packing the court. He wants to now replace the court with something else.
Yeah.
We don't know what that is,
the
but
Olber
I'm sure.
Court.
Yeah, the Olber Court. Because you remember in the old show, he used to call everyone sir. You sir. Yeah. And he would then denounce George W. Bush for like 20 minutes. I guess it would just be the Olber Court.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't want to pack it. He wants to recreate it.
Yeah, good luck. There is that pesky thing of Article 3. So I mean, I guess somehow he'll deal with that. But all part of the Democrats' plan.
I mean, it really is amazing that at this point, there's been no decision made apart from we'll hear the case.
Yes.
We'll actually take a look at this.
No, they'll swat Trump down. I mean, the question is it going to be 7-2 or 9-0?
Yeah, he's going to lose.
He's going to lose badly. And like John Roberts is going to absolutely peacock that decision, which he will write. You can pretty much guess.
Yes.
So he will lose. It's just like you're not going to get your trial as soon as you thought.
It's the delay.
But
the
he's right. He's won in the process of losing. The delay is the win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he gets elected.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get elected, I mean, we haven't really talked about how that kind of ruins the inside straight. But if he gets elected, he just pulls Jack Smith off of both of these federal prosecutions and he's done. Georgia's falling apart. New York's a joke. Both of the federal prosecutions will go away if Trump gets reelected.
But Florida, documents,
it's
boxes.
Going away. He'll just pull Jack Smith off of the case. That's it. That case is not going to go to trial before Trump gets reelected, if he gets reelected.
Okay.
So all he has to do, he doesn't have to pardon himself. Only when there's a conviction do you have to pardon. He just says, Jack Smith, you're fired. My attorney general is probably going to be Mike Davis, brief frequent guest on our show, is the new sheriff in town. He's going to decide whether this is an appropriate case for an independent prosecutor or counsel, a special counselor. And the answer is going to be no. So both the Fed prosecutions die if Trump gets reelected. So now we're only talking about Georgia and New York. And that's why he just needs delay in the federal prosecutions. And the Mar-a-Lago case, he's got it, because that's just such a morass with the classified who can see what. And the J6 case was the worst one. Chutkan doesn't like him. The D.C. jury won't like him. Obviously, Jack Smith doesn't like him. And that's the case he just... is that she can't issue any rulings now. She can't do anything in this case until the Supreme Court issues its decision, which probably won't be till the end of June. And she can't even keep motion practice going. Like, let's keep pedal to the metal just in case. No, it has to all be shut down. So there's no way she's going to get this case tried once she gets, you know, the green light, which we all think she's going to get, that Trump won't win the actual argument at SCOTUS, between July 1st and November 1st. Not a chance.
So that leaves Manhattan, which he would, let's say, it's the weakest case and the one most likely to be tried, and maybe the one most likely he would lose.
Yeah.
Just because it would be pretty unfair, and he will get zero, I think, political damage done by being declared guilty in the Manhattan case, because people will see it, I think, transparently as this is just a political hit job. I mean, look at the way that Tish James is comporting herself
these days.
Yeah. This is like, I mean, and this has something to do with the Fannie Willis too. Like, you're not bringing your best here, your best foot forward, saying we are serving impartial justice. We are being professional in our job. No, they're going,
no
scoreboard, and you're like an elected official. What are you doing? That's not building any confidence from people that there's any kind of sense of rule of law. A trusted third party is out there delivering justice equally. So if Trump gets convicted only in Manhattan.
New York has humiliated itself. New York used to be a shining star amongst benches and jurists. And now look what we've done in the past couple of years. We changed the law so that E. Jean Carroll could get Trump. And she has this ridiculous damages award, which doesn't comport with anything, of $80 million for her alleged defamation.
Oh, yeah,
sure. Of what reputation,
which,
again?
Which almost smells like a double jeopardy kind of situation.
Yeah.
Being prosecuted for approximately the same thing in both of those cases. One $5 million, one $80 million.
It was libel.
Yeah, but I mean, it's absurd. It bears no relation to her actual damages, this punitive award. And then we have the $450 million, $355, but with the interest, $450 so far.
Yeah.
From Tish James. And on top of that, now you've got the Stormy Daniels hush payment case coming, which I think you're right. People, maybe we're wrong, right? Maybe some portion of independents really mean, no, a conviction's a conviction. It'll change my view on Trump. But over Stormy Daniels and hush money?
Which has been adjudicated, you know, 6 years ago, 5 years ago. I mean, people have made up their mind about that in the same way that if you resurfaced the Access Hollywood tape, people wouldn't actually react to it very much. But, you know, I mean, I think that the Fannie Willis stuff, in listening to your show, and I said to the two lads we recorded last night, and I said, God, Megan is really obsessed with this Fannie Willis character.
Totally.
And so like when I had seen clips.
Yeah.
And this is, they deserve to lose these things, right? Because when I saw her being cross-examined, I was like, was there an interview process here? Because she's like, I have bags of money. We all, don't you have a sack of money? It's like, what the, is this real? This is the woman trying to take down the president? She's like, I don't use banks. My daddy never used the bank. And I was like, oh my Lord. So yeah, I think that he's doing okay now after I watched that.
The entire case has an explicit like soap opera quality to it.
Yes.
It feels like the sort of thing that Tyler Perry might pull together. Like this preposterous courtroom drama, like the former divorce attorney who, like, incidentally just kind of acknowledges explicitly, oh, they definitely had a relationship.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
absolutely know it for sure.
Yeah.
And then on the stand, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
God damn.
It's incredible.
It was amazing. Now, we've run the clip many times, but my favorite was, she's like, you want us to believe you had hunks of cash, thousands and thousands, that you just found and gave to Nathan Wade at a time when you were $4,600 under a tax lien. Mm. Oh, now you're going to tell me how to pay my bills?
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
in fact, ma'am, yes, I am.
I love the very sort of shrill defenses, like, oh, again, another black woman's being attacked, kind of thing. And I would suggest,
which she even made herself, by the way.
Sure. So it allowed people to lean in. But for all of us in this country who laughed at Four Seasons Landscaping, right? Who
which
laughed
funny.
At some,
right.
which is hilarious. Yeah,
that brought me back.
Who
oh
laughed
gosh.
At Rudy Giuliani's
Giuliani
makeup.
Dripping,
the
hair
dripping down here.
Yeah.
Who laughed at like the MyPillow guy and all these sort of weird clowns who are around Trump advising him about crazy things, all of whom are like, they owe hundreds of millions of dollars
correct.
In various lawsuits, yes. by the way. If you laughed at all of that, or Trump's hot lawyer that both
yes.
of you guys like.
Yes.
But who's,
great lawyer.
Who's
Alina
bad,
Hava?
Yes. Who's bad yes. at lawyering from yes. everything I can tell.
But she's swiping the right direction, Matt, when you see her profile. That's the important thing.
If you laugh at all those things, and so many people in journalism laughed at all of those things, don't get high and mighty about, oh, we're being too mean to the prosecutor, because those people that you were laughing at, those are private lawyers, turns out, right?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't agents of the court necessarily. These are people who are on the payroll of the city and the state and the county and the whatever. You're paying, your taxes are paying for them, and they're behaving this badly.
That's right.
So it is funny, and we're going to laugh because that's what you do. You laugh at all the
it's
ridiculousness.
Laugh or cry.
Thank you. It's 2024. That's the motto of the year. then you laugh at this, but also save a little bit of outrage, because you should have impartial and professional behavior among the people who have this awesome power that we've given prosecutors in this country, and they're not acting at all professionally or well.
And by the way, on the race thing, yes, it's like white defense attorneys representing, I don't know if they're all white or black. I actually haven't looked at the defendants in the Georgia case, but the two witnesses against Fannie and Nathan
correct.
Are also
mm-hmm.
black.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like they're
yeah.
doing their best to make it into a black thing. It's failing. I will tell you, we have an interesting update today. We talked yesterday, let me pull it up on my phone, about Terrence Bradley, the difference between Terrence Bradley, you know, in the text to Ashley Merchant, like, yeah, they totally started well before they testified, and I can give you all these names, and these are the people who I think know, versus on the stand, I know nothing. It was, you know,
speculation.
Sergeant Schultz, right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
I don't know enough to know if I was lying.
I have the old, like I'm an ancient person, honestly. All my references are so old.
Yeah.
Somebody once said on Twitter the other day, you're old if you like Frasier. I'm like,
yeah.
huh.
Well, on the podcast last night, talking about this very issue, I did make a Red Fox reference, so yeah. go ahead.
Works
with
for
Tom.
Me.
Yes.
Who didn't watch it? Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so the guy who spoke to Terrence Bradley, in between cooperative Terrence Bradley and I know nothing Terrence Bradley, was his name is Banks. Okay, I'm trying to remember his first name. Is it Gabe? Yeah, Gabe Banks. And this, we told the audience yesterday that Gabe Banks called, according to Terrence Bradley, after it became pretty clear he was cooperating with the defense in some way, or at least there was a suspicion. And suddenly, Terrence Bradley did a 180, you know, no, nothing happened. And so the implication by the defense lawyers at the hearing was, he threatened you, right? Like, we don't know what he threatened you with. There's a whole host of things, potentially. I don't know, it could be anything, but this guy, Gabe, is very close friends with Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade. We knew he was friends with Nathan Wade, and we knew that his wife worked for Fannie Willis. Well, now it turns out, let me get the facts correct. He, Banks, was sworn in as a judge pro tem under Fannie Willis in a different court. And not only that, he also invited Fannie Willis to his wedding. And we've seen pictures of Fannie Willis all around his wedding. So Fannie Willis, it's not just Nathan Wade. Fannie Willis is very close, apparently, with this guy Banks, who was the one person, according to Terrence Bradley, who did call him in between cooperative Terrence and Sergeant Schultz Terrence.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look good.
Doesn't look bad.
No.
So what's the upshot here? She's removed from the case. There's questions about kind of the credibility of things. They've got to find a new attorney to end up leading the case. But it doesn't necessarily mean the case goes away.
No,
but it
doesn't.
Certainly could mean that it's delayed until after the election.
Correct. Which, and that now he would not, as president, have the power to pull that DA off of the case.
Right.
But the thing is, there are real questions about this is Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
It's not New York. You know, the real question about whether there's another DA down there who wants to take this case.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Why would you want to take this on? You'd have to be somebody who's very politically ambitious, mm-hmm. who wanted to make yourself a star, which we know is true of Fannie Willis. She hired the media company to monitor her mentions, get back to me with how many articles they're writing about me. She runs to the microphones every time she gets the chance, from the church to beyond. And now any prosecutor knows what he or she's getting themselves into. You've got a very talented team of defense lawyers on a very shitty case. This is a crappy, made-up RICO violation that she just found a way to bring. So who would want this dog and to have to make it hunt and sick the new president or likely president against you? Like, I don't know that it is clear in a state like Georgia, there's another DA at the ready. And I actually don't even know. I think the way they'd have to do it is there's like an overseeing board that would like decide or try to get a prosecutor to take it. And I think that board, it's not a bunch of Fulton County Democrats. It's more statewide, which means they're probably a little redder.
Impartial. Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So it's the best Trump could hope for.
Mm-hmm. I just think that you should never count out Americans right now ability to voluntarily self-degrade as they're going about their political lives.
Hopeful thought.
How many times, I need to see this with Trump and his legal team and his personal conduct and other things, like, you think he's not going to do the next thing, is he? Like, it's been 7-8 years that he's been in our political life. He does the next thing every time.
Every time.
And the people in the Never Trump crew, they do the next thing too.
Yeah.
Or they will come back and relitigate and say, no, like, he still is a Russian stooge. They're still holding on to this.
We're at the point where if you go back, and I actually had cause to do this for something I was writing, went back to look at MSNBC and Rachel Maddow in particular in 2016, 17, 18. And it is just a derangement. Watching it with the kind of eyes of right now, after the Mueller report, after everything we know about Russia, that Donald Trump was an agent of the Kremlin, of the KGB, of the FSB, of the Bolsheviks in 1917, anything they could throw at him was unbelievable. So they tried to do this in every possible way. And you get it from, you know, the Access Hollywood tape, which I mentioned before, you know, all of this stuff. The guy's a bad guy. Okay, well, the people who like him, well, they're deplorables. They're mostly racist. Okay, that number's very, very big, 60 plus million. So where do we go? We can't call them all racist. That just doesn't really read with most people. And then the lawfare started. And the lawfare is like, does Donald Trump set himself up for this? Yes, he does. Every time, because he cannot help himself. He walks into these issues. The call, let's not forget, in Georgia is a pretty despicable call, that if you had Joe Biden ever saying something like that, all of my conservative Republican friends would be like, can you believe that Joe Biden was admonishing these officials saying, go and find me the votes? It's a bad sentence, right? It's not a perfect
call. It's not a bad sentence. I mean, it is a bad sentence, but I can defend the nature of the call.
You can defend the nature of the call, and it might not be illegal, and it's the RICO stuff and all this stuff seems insane to me, but it's, let's just say, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
And a very, very, like, he sets himself up for this
stuff. His behavior after January 6th and after the election was terrible.
It remains terrible for a lot of reasons. But this desperation, they don't want to win fair. They don't want to fight it out at the ballot box.
I have got to play the Chris Hayes soundbite now. I mean, you just teed it up perfectly. Watch his reaction to finding out that SCOTUS is taking
this in April,
the immunity case. Yeah. I mean, talk about meltdown. Look at it. All the things you just said. Watch.
That they would rob the People's Department of Justice the opportunity to present all the evidence of his guilt. That the voters of this country, you and I, the hundreds of millions of us, might be robbed of the information we need to determine whether the man is guilty of the gravest crime any politician has been accused of since the Civil War. If you were hoping that Donald Trump's authoritarian disregard for the rule of law was going to be stopped by Americans' institutions and the court at the highest level, that hope is severely diminished today. The Mueller investigation didn't stop him. Two congressional impeachments did not stop him. Today is the starkest proof yet that in the zero-sum battle between MAGA and democracy, there was and is only one thing that could ever truly stop Donald Trump, and that is we the people. Americans voting against him, a majority.
The light bulb has finally gone off.
Yeah, okay. And when you're hungry, you eat. I mean, are there basic things that you want to talk about? I mean, I've done Chris's show a number of times. I like Chris. He's a very, very smart guy. But that is a distilled cope. That is very, very 100-proof cope of saying, we didn't get him and listing off these things. Oh, you're trying to get him. I think you're trying to illuminate things for the voters.
Yeah.
You just said two contradictory things, or maybe they're complementary things, that we, the people, need the information. Oh, and by the way, why didn't we get him this time? Now, oh God, we have to do it at the ballot box.
And the Supreme Court has robbed the Justice Department of its opportunity to hold him to account. What?
Yeah.
They're kind of the head of the Justice Department, of all justice in the United States.
Yes.
And they ultimately will tell us what the law is or is not, the Constitution is or, like, he's upset that they're playing any role in it whatsoever. It's the Supreme Court.
Don't you want, if you are a critic of Trump and of crazy ideas about presidential immunity or executive branch or executive authority immunity, don't you want the Supreme Court to come out 7-2, maybe even 9-0, saying, no, you can't claim immunity for the bad guy doing bad things while he's in office? That's not enough.
That's why they're doing it.
That's why they're doing it.
And they're going to rule against him.
When they come up with that rule against him, it's going to weaken his cases in court. It's going to remove a tool from him, and it's going to build something that our kids and our kids' kids are going to be able to, if we still have a country, are still going to, I hear that we don't have a country anymore because fentanyl on the border or something. But we want those tools. We want the Supreme Court to have that ruling. That's a good ruling. And that's a good ruling from an MSNBC point of view, and it's a good ruling for the Fox point of view.
If they really just wanted to be partisan hacks, the Supreme Court, they would not have fast-tracked the appeal. They didn't have to take it for this term. They could have said, you got a very good appeal here, sir. We'll hear it when we come back for business in October, which completely would have, you know, basically kept them out of it and allowed the lower case to potentially go. But this is what Jack Smith said. He said, don't hear it, but if you're going to hear it, because Trump hadn't actually sought an appeal. He had sought a delay. And the Supreme Court said, we're going to treat this as a petition, like, to actually appeal. And we're going to treat it. And we're going to go forward with an appeal right now. So Jack Smith got a little win and Trump got a little win. And the Supreme Court's ultimately, we all agree, going to give Jack Smith a bigger win. But net net, it's a win for Trump because of delay. All right, I want to raise one other thing with you guys, because you mentioned the revisionism and looking back and the hackery. A couple weeks ago, when the news broke about Smirnov, the FBI informant, being full of shit, right? That this guy was misleading the FBI and then ultimately all of us about Biden and Biden Jr., Hunter, taking the $5 million and $5 million bribes. We literally had a segment on MSNBC where I think it was the national security reporter, said, this totally redeems those 51 intelligence agents.
Correct.
Who said—
I saw that,
Did you say— It's Russian.
It was absolutely astonishing.
It was crazy talk. Maybe we can pull it over. Team, I didn't ask for it. See if you can find it, because we had it cut at one point.
Yeah.
But that's the level of madness that we're at right now.
It's actually, I don't even think it's madness. I think it's sinister. Because you know, if you're somebody who's a national security correspondent, that all of the information about Hunter Biden, it remains true in the sense that he had a job that he was totally unqualified for. Mm-hmm. He was a drug addict. He was getting paid an exorbitant amount of money. For what reason? For his last name, period, right? He did say in text messages, you know, my dad's going to be pissed if this doesn't, the big guy.
Sure did.
All this, you know, he's having dinners with people there. What does that mean? Okay, well, we can go into the weeds on that, but it doesn't invalidate any of those claims and things that should be looked at. The fact that the president's brother and the president's son are involved in these shady business dealings, they are relevant. And are there things that should be pulled back from that? I think so, yeah. I mean, we have to look at this stuff again. I mean, the FBI is in association with a guy because he has associations with Russian intelligence. That's why they're in business with him. They're aware of this stuff. Is there stuff that he... Apparently there is. I don't know. We'll find out. But to say that this invalidates everything...
What he's saying is... Again, we're going to try to find the clip. But what he's saying is that letter by those 51 intelligence agencies saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, that they've been redeemed, that somehow this one guy with Russian connections, which they knew he had Russian connections, to your point, that somehow makes them right in retrospect. It's a lie. That's not... the Hunter Biden is suing right now, saying the laptop is mine and it shouldn't have been disseminated to anybody other than me. It is his. He acknowledged it.
And I should say this, that I mistakenly presume that everyone would know that that letter was about the laptop. The incredible thing was that you could have validated in one day. It was a very, very simple thing. Everyone was lying about it at the time. You just find one of the emails and call the person who's on the other end of that email and say, did you get this email? Is this a real email? People aren't inventing those chains. Very, very easy and very, very quick to do. The idea that that all of this was misinformation or that this has been vindicated, I think is an unbelievably sinister way of presenting information. It's false. It's fake. The laptop was real.
Yes.
And the thing that's key
as their own network is verified. They've all verified it now.
And the key to this is what happens when you say Russian Russian agent he was talking to. The entire, it's like putting oxygen into the fire. It reignites for all of them. And they're like, the Russia thing is
back. I'm back.
And we can talk about Russia again. And it's like, well, yeah, but you're not talking about it in a way that's even remotely honest.
Yeah, it's no, it's the moment at the massage when, you know, you flip over and you know it. Well,
I've never done anything like that.
I don't go to your massage parlor, Megan. Maybe I should.
Great people. I love them.
The conclusions in all of these instances always precede the evidence. Like, they know that Trump is bad. They know he's a criminal of various sorts. Whatever the merits or demerits of these cases, not up for debate. The only question here is whether or not people are going to scrutinize these prosecutions, whether or not they're going to indulge any of the delay tactics or whatever else that the Trump defense team employs to try to fight back against these cases. You may or may not like those things, but I would expect an honest journalist who is trying to look at this in a somewhat objective way to acknowledge some of these cases just aren't particularly great. Yeah. Some of these cases do appear to be explicitly politically motivated. I mean, if you're someone who supported the inquiry into then President Trump's call to Ukraine and thought this is justifiable, we should ask questions about that. Sure. I don't see how you're not in favor of an inquiry into Joe Biden and his son's conduct, especially because his son has said repeatedly in private correspondence, yeah, my dad is involved.
All they're looking to do is cover their own hides. We were right all along. We were right about Russia.
Right.
We were right about the 51 intelligence agents. Here is the clip we found. It's from Morning Joe, and you'll see and listen to Willie Geist and Ken Delanian. Watch this nonsense.
The revelation of a Russian-linked informant here comes nearly 4 years after many in the American intelligence community warned Moscow was behind many of the allegations being levied at the Biden family.
Willie, those 51 former intelligence officials, they paid a steep price for signing that letter. And as it turns out, they were right. Not in the sense, they said that the laptop was part of a Russian information operation or had all the hallmarks of a Russian information operation. They didn't say that the contents of the laptop were made up. And obviously, we know that they weren't. Many of them have been now corroborated. What they said was they were suspicious about why that story was emerging in the middle of an election campaign. And now they've been proven correct in the sense that we now know that Russian intelligence, at least according to the statements of this informant, bolstered somewhat by this indictment, were feeding him information, false information. But back to those 51 intelligence officials, I mean, obviously what they were doing was trying to help Joe Biden. They've acknowledged that. But the point that they were making in that letter holds up over time, which is that the Russians were trying to flaunt the story
that
Joe Biden and his son were
corrupt.
Isn't that outrageous? Yeah. I've been saving that for you guys.
That's crazy. That's so like, the argument is basically, sure, it's all true, but these guys gave it to them and that was bad. I think that's what he's saying. I'm trying to...
In the middle
the decoder
of a...
Ring.
The Russians have been out to get us. That's it. And that's really all those 51 agents.
But why wouldn't they concoct emails and give more persuasive evidence?
But I think this is probably what happened. And again, you know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of America, I want you to know that I'm speculating here, just like I was on the stand at a Fani Willis Trump, just speculating. But I imagine that there was a Russian guy, just random person, who smoked a ton of crack with Hunter Biden, which I've heard is actually a very fun time. And then was like, let's go to the laptop shop in Delaware and just drop it off.
Yeah.
You'll probably forget about it. And they're like, you know, to the other Russian.
And then hit the water slides.
It's not as if this stuff was hacked material in like the WikiLeaks way.
Right.
Because then you maybe would have a case.
Yeah.
Okay, this stuff is real, but where did it come from? A dubious source. We get rid of that idea and say, well, it's a dubious source, but it's true. And the contents are true. The idea that this was a Russian setup is the fact that Hunter dropped the laptop off himself.
So the legally blind guy.
Yes.
Who then got contacted by Rudy Giuliani, or who then contacted Rudy Giuliani,
as
but Hunter
do.
Never, as
Hunter never paid him.
To say, my God, there's some crazy shit on here. You should take a look.
Yeah.
The Russians had nothing to do with it.
No.
That's the truth. The 51 intelligence agents had, they were completely wrong to suggest, in advance of that presidential debate, that this was Russian disinformation planted and so on. And by the way, Hunter Biden fostered that lie. Joe Biden fostered that lie. Mm-hmm. All of them fostered, and it was a lie. And the fact that there's this one agent with ties to Russian intelligence who we knew had those ties, that's why we were using him as an agent, wound up making one thing up about Hunter having nothing to do with a laptop, does not rehabilitate any of those guys.
No. Mm-hmm. I think one unstated reason why people are so invested in that story being true that is not true is that, and this kind of goes to the whole role that the laptop story played, is that the media and social media included treated the Hunter Biden laptop story and the New York Post story back then, with this sense of PTSD from Hillary Clinton and James Comey in October of 2016.
Correct.
Media self-analysis, which I think is incorrect, but it's at least interesting, that they overplayed the Hillary Clinton email server so much then, that cost the election, and we're not going to do that again. It's a very strange thing for someone who's supposed to be in kind of a semi-impartial fact-gathering business to judge their actions based on the potential electoral impact. When I was growing up in journalism, that wasn't the way that people tend to think out loud, at least. But a lot of the people who want to rehabilitate those 51 intelligence officers who were lying are trying to rehabilitate their own decisions in supporting Twitter for banning the New York Post from Twitter. Not just like the story, just banned
the story, and then they banned the New York Post. In that story, the Hunter Biden laptop, for me, as a journalist, and of course, one of the things you have to point out in this is journalism always overemphasizing its degree of importance.
Yep.
That had we not done that, the people who are voting for Donald Trump in swing states were like, I was just looking at this New York Times story about Hillary Clinton. That didn't happen, guys. I'm sorry, nobody gives a shit about what you think. Stop thinking that you matter. They don't matter. But the thing that, why the Hunter Biden laptop story was so important for me, was literally watching the media collapse in a way that was like, no, we have control of everything. Mm. We control the narrative. And they've done that in a quiet way, not so quiet all the time, but it's given people like Brent Bozell and these conservative groups saying, there's a liberal media. That's what it used to be. When that started spinning out of control, when there was other avenues of people getting news, whether it's Megyn Kelly's podcast or The Fifth Column or whatever it might be, Glenn Greenwald, who's talked a lot about this story, and I think he left The Intercept, a company he started over this story, because they're saying, we no longer have all the keys, so we need to actually just shut stories down now. And that's what they did. They shut a story preemptively and saying, we don't know if this is true. We don't know if it's Russian disinformation. It's like, you can say that about how many stories?
You write anything.
Pretty much anything.
Not only that, but it's not just that they're being skeptical and agnostic.
Yeah.
They were saying that it positively was disinformation when it positively was not. They came to the conclusion that was the opposite of the truth.
Twitter at the time didn't say that, though, right? They didn't explicitly say that.
They didn't need to. 2 points. One, Cheryl Atkinson, she left CBS after a dozen years or so. And she's actually got a podcast out right now talking about how over there she was having a similar problem. It's why she left. It was all of her stories kept getting killed, she believed, for either ideological reasons or because they were in bed with the subject of her reporting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these media companies have been so bought up. It used to be that the principle of reporting the news, irrespective of who might be paying your advertising bills, was more important, right? But now, who's paying your advertising bills is more important. That's, after the drug partnership and Pfizer's everywhere, that was one of the issues. She was talking about this report she tried to do on Boeing and the explosions of these lithium batteries on board Boeings. And she had gotten a whistleblower who was ready to go out with this whole report, and they kept killing it at every turn. But anyway, the censorship happens in a number of different ways, and it's a very different model than it was when we were all kids watching the nightly news.
It's explicit now.
Right? It's explicit. All right, the second point is Hunter Biden's back in the news, as you may have seen. It was on Capitol Hill yesterday. This is per Andy McCarthy, who put this together at National Review yesterday. I am here to provide the committees with the one uncontestable fact that should end the false premise of this inquiry. I did not involve my father in my business. Cut back to his WhatsApp message, July 30th, 2017, sent to his CEFC, Chinese Communist Party, business partner official. I am sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. Mm. Tell the director I would like to resolve this now before it gets out of hand, and now means tonight. And Z, if I get a call or a text from anyone other involved in this other than you, Zhang or the chairman, I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me and every person he knows and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I am sitting here waiting for the call with my father.
Yes,
I mean,
with my father. And did you see his explanation for this?
He was inebriated, which that was a very carefully written email
right.
for someone who is super duper high and can't remember anything. I don't know what. Maybe I was drunk or high when I sent that.
I've never written a text that was that, you know, perfect. When I was, it's usually like, I cannot believe how awesome this movie is. It's usually something is really bad.
This ice cream tastes so good.
Imagine you're in a situation. This is the situation.
Where are the Cheetos?
With the president and his family. That the two best arguments against, you know, you being a guilty party and any of this stuff, is that you're a crackhead or you have dementia. Those are our two options, America. It's like, I'm sorry, I was turned up on crack, and my dad, you know him, he's like falling down upstairs all the time. So what are you going to make of it?
So this story reminds me of my husband's sister. And she's hilarious. She lives in Cape Cod. And he launched a podcast. It airs on SiriusXM. It's called Dedicated with Doug Runt. And she always does the voice texting, which is not good.
It does not translate the words properly.
Yeah, yeah. And so her texts are always hilarious because you're like, what is she saying? And what she had meant to say was, Dugger, I just really love your podcast.
Oh, no.
And the way it translated was, Dugger, I really love your black ass.
Not mutually exclusive, yeah. I suppose.
I was really worried about the word Dugger.
Yeah, me too.
That was different.
Wait, why? My mind's not going there.
There's a couple versions.
Fucker? Is that what
a lot of possibilities. But Camille might be.
Camille's the one who's always coming up with that.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
All right, stand by. We're going to let that marinate while we take a quick break and squeeze in some lucky advertiser who gets to come after that. More with the fifth column right after this.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
My guests today, the guys from the Fifth Column, were live in person at SiriusXM headquarters. It's funny because my hairstylist, Sarah, and friend is with me because, you know, we need good hair. And she asked me whether I have PTSD working here right across from Fox.
Yeah.
And you know, the truth is, I have it more from NBC, which is right across the street.
Yeah.
I don't have PTSD from my Fox years, though. You know, it's a mixed bag, right? You kind of look at the building and it's like some good memories, but a lot of tough ones, too. I'm so much happier being where I am now. It's like, aren't you guys so happy to be independent? Aren't you so happy now with Vice imploding?
What are you talking about?
I don't know
anything about this media organization that was horrible. No, I mean, I have to say that the German word Schadenfreude is absolutely perfect for this because you see it happen and you still have a few friends there. But at the same time, you also say, I've been telling you this was going to happen for a very long time. And it's not, as everyone says, because executives made too much money. They did make too much money. They were terrible. They were really bad at everything. But no one talks about the most important thing, which was content. And the content became insufferable and priggish and scolding. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to come home from a day of work, sit down on the couch, turn on the TV, open up their laptop, and be told that, you know, their privilege is destroying everyone around them.
How did they go woke with this guy as their founder? By the way, I heard an interesting report on the Journal that he was offered $3.6 billion by Disney at one point to sell Vice.
Yes.
Now it's out of business. Mm-hmm. The latest that the investment firm bought it for was $350 million, but it's not worth that anymore. It's closing. I mean, it's done. The experiment's over. And it used to be this kind of hip, cool place for especially young guys. I don't know. It seemed like young guys would read Vice Vice.
I went to work there for that reason. And the fact that deal didn't go through did make me financially a lot poorer. I could have been a lot richer.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who are in the same situation that they held out. And when you start believing your own bullshit, it's a pretty, like a legitimately toxic environment, not in the sort of trendy use of that word, but people start believing the media narrative about themselves.
What's his name? Shane Smith?
Shane Smith. Okay. And, but you know, it's funny that when you look at all these old stories, the $3.6 billion was at the same time that the valuation of the company was 5 billion. and sometimes even $6 billion. Mm-hmm. It's a privately held company. How do all of these media organizations report that stuff without a caveat? The caveat is we're trusting the people from within this company who obviously have an incentive to inflate the value of the company. The reason that number was considerably lower from Disney was because they got to take a few peeks inside. And I think that was even a little much, which is why they walked away and didn't fight for something in the middle or something. That the collapse of that essentially spelled the end of the company.
So how did they go? How did they go woke and annoying? I sat next to that guy years ago, maybe 16, I think it was. Mm-hmm. We went out to the Oscars. This is back when, you know, people wanted to be next to me at the Oscars events because they thought I hated Trump.
Yeah.
And then they found out I didn't, and it went downhill. Yeah. But we went to this event, and I remember we were sitting at this table with like Rupert Murdoch and Lachlan Murdoch and Shane Smith, and he was like this cowboy, you know, it was like saying really loud, foul things, which I wasn't offended by, but I was like, wow, look at it. It's very different than the other table mates. And that was, they were interested in him, I think, for the same reason every media mogul was interested in him, because he seemed young and like a like a gunslinger.
And they were scared of the future because their core audience averages age 70.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So what happened? How does that guy wind up, you know, with a woke organization? Was it because he cashed out a couple years ago?
I remember being in the office, an older iteration of the office, when someone whispered to me, I guess it was 2011 or 12, that Rupert Murdoch was there. And everyone was like, wait, Rupert Murdoch is here? Why? And then we find out why. He put money into the organization. Other people in his family did too. I think that there's a number of reasons that it fell apart. There's a number of reasons that the politics became so crazy. But I think the most obvious one is when you give up control because you want to be taken seriously. When you're the cowboy organization, you want the accolades of the real people. You want the awards from the actual institutions. And then you start hiring people from journalism school and they ruin it. They ruin it. I don't think it was Shane Smith that made a decision to, I think people sat back and said, well, these are what the pros do. They know what's right. And it turns out that nobody liked this stuff. The other stuff, I mean, if you, I never use comments as a weather vane of anything, particularly on like YouTube comments. But if you looked for the past like 3, 4, 5 years on the comments on Vice stuff, the first 20 were always, what happened to you guys? I used to love this stuff and now I can't stand it. And you know, I'm not, you said Cheryl Atkinson, I'm not unlike that. In the sense that, yeah, I couldn't do the stories I wanted to do. I stopped even bothering to pitch them at a certain point.
That's what she said, too.
And tried to make the stories that I did do better and, you know, more balanced and more interesting. And I hope I did a good job at that. But, you know, it's my fault, too. I stayed there. I mean, I was well compensated and, you know, we had a show on HBO and it was great to do that. But it involved a certain amount of compromise. And no one came to me saying, you know, you have a slightly different point of view. That'll be more fun for the show. That'll create a little tension. People will get involved. They'll debate it. They'll argue about it in the comments, whatever it might be. There is a point where nobody wanted that. It, you know, if you went into a meeting, an editorial meeting, and you pitch something that was any of the stories that you that I've ever talked about on the show, it would just be silence. And, you know, people would not want to do any stories that were off the kind of acceptable path of, you know, what can one say? Progressivism. That's probably the easiest way to say
it. How much did the New York Times story or series, I forget what it was, that came out, I think 2019, portraying Vice as like this toxic hotbed of like, you know, quasi-rapist misogyny.
Right, misogyny.
Yeah, early 2019.
Yeah, I forget exactly when it was. But like that, and that story was long gestating. Everyone was like stealing for it for months.
And then they dropped it on a Saturday.
They dropped it on a Saturday. Wasn't
what happens when you drop a story on a Saturday?
It wasn't a very convincing story, but I'm sure it had internal ramifications at Vice. Some people left because of it. How much did that moment?
But you know, the funny thing about stories like this is a lot of people breathed a sigh of relief and they said, well, you know, it wasn't that bad, this New York Times story about a Me Too scandal or a series of small ones within Vice. And, you know, I made a different argument and said, yeah, but you know what people are going to remember? That there was a story. That's all they remember. Mm-hmm. They don't remember any of the details. Mm-hmm. Nobody remembers any of the details. They do remember, I mean, the big ones in like in your situation, like Roger Ailes, that you know, they were trying to get, you know, Shane Smith. They were trying to get the top leadership. They didn't get that. And they got a lesser story. But that was the beginning of the end for the organization. They cleaned house after that. They brought in a bunch of, you know, boring corporate people. They made sure that the CEO was a woman, of course, and people who had no idea what the brand and what the idea was. And I talked to people who told me one thing about politics, about how they viewed the world, and then would get on a call or do a town hall with the entire staff and say something entirely different. This happened over
Chick-fil-A
and over and over.
Yeah, did you have to pull a pink Starburst out of a jar your sandwich story?
My versions of that are 1,000 times better, and they're more numerous. Yeah,
there's still truthers, chicken truthers, who are saying it's made up.
Yeah,
Nicole Hannah-Jones is still at it, going out there saying, "Go ahead. Was this fact checked? Was this fact checked to the point where the Atlantic had to come out and say, yes, we fact checked even the Chick-fil-A story."
And this is the Adam Rubinstein story.
Yeah, the guy who left New York Times. And said, I got shamed over the fact that I said I like Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I mean, and, he left over the
James
Tom Cotton
email.
But it was funny. Like, they didn't even come out and say it. It was Jesse Singel, our friend, and the host of one of the hosts of Blocked and Reported, who emailed them. Because everyone's truthering on X. And
hold
just,
that thought. I do want to pick this up because you've got to hear some of this, but I got to pay a bill first. I love to pay my bills because my advertisers make these conversations possible. Stand by. Fifth Column stays with us.
Having a team feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
We can't leave the subject of Vice News without asking you about this. This made news. Per CNN, see, that's how you do it, media reporter Oliver Darcy, he in his newsletter, he talked about this virtual Vice Media Town Hall happened on Wednesday. The meeting had to, quote, be ultimately scrapped after some laid off employees invited to the virtual meeting inundated leadership with thumbs down emojis.
Yeah,
they, quote, became too much to ignore, flooding the screen for all to see, said a Vice Media executive. In a statement to CNN, the spokesperson said, it's unfortunate that employees remaining with the organization who greatly want to contribute to its success were sabotaged by a few bad actors.
Mm. Well, it's also not true because they were prevented from asking questions. That's why they did it.
Oh. Yeah.
Somebody sent me a video of it. I still get information from there. It was just the thumbs down emoji covering this woman, you know, spewing bullshit about what's happening at Vice. And yeah, there was no opportunity for these people who were recently laid off and, you know, being laid off as this is happening, people were laid off, you know, a couple days ago, to ask any questions like, what happened? What is this company becoming? You know, am I getting a severance, which is the thing that none of them are getting. So that I thought was hilarious.
That's amazing. They had their say one way or the other. What's also going to get a thumbs down is Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House not giving us any information about President Biden's cognitive health or access to his doctor. So he's had his annual physical. It happened last year in February and this year again in February. And he apparently is fine, super robust. His gait is a little stiff, but no worse than last year. And when asked the money question, which is, what about the cognitive test? Yeah. Here's what Karine Jean-Pierre said, SOT 4.
Did the president take a mental fitness or cognitive test during his physical this morning?
You know, the president doesn't need a cognitive test. That is not my assessment. The assessment of the president's doctor. That is also the assessment of the neurologist who has also made that assessment as well. And I'll reiterate this. The president's doctor has said, if you look at what this president, he passes a cognitive test every day. Every day, moves from one topic to another topic, understanding the granular level of these topics.
Wow.
Changes topics.
Wow.
He changes quotes, even as he's trying to read them.
Yeah.
In the big amazing type that is staff circled about Abe Lincoln. Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything to take a cognitive test. Just prove it.
Then. Yeah,
okay,
then why not?
It's fine.
Do it.
He's doing all the other stuff. Well, he says he doesn't need one.
Can't you tell, like, when you watch her, you can tell she's nervous, right? Like, she gets all, like, shaky. Yeah. The eyelids with all nervous. The sparkly shadows start to flutter a little bit more. Like, she's like, oh, shit, we're on my weakest issue.
The president.
Talking.
Right, the president.
The president. Talking about the president.
Well, then the press corps, to its credit, because, you know, even the Democrats are not sure they want Biden now, so they're a little bit aggressive on the health now. Nothing like what they should be. But, you know, it's rare to see a little aggression by them. They're like, give us access to the doctor. Put him out here, which is not unheard of. And here's how she handled that.
Why is the president or your office not willing to make Dr. O'Connor available to us? Why
so,
not?
So a couple of things, Andrew. And the president said that they thought he was too young. So, you know, you will certainly make this robust, comprehensive memo, as we have done the last 2 years, available to all of you. The doctor coming to the briefing room, it is not a norm. We're trying to get back to the norm.
I'll bet.
I want Trump's doctor out there, man.
I loved him.
Just rocking that haircut.
Yeah, perfect. Dr. Vinny Boombots or whatever his name
was. Like, it's easy to laugh, but it really is infuriating.
Yeah.
He needs a cognitive test. It's only the United States of America. It's the most important country in the world. We deserve to know whether this guy can pass a cognitive test. It's pretty basic. We're so forgiving. We allow the 81-year-old man with all these problems to stay in the office, at least right now. Nobody's 25th Amendmented him. I verbed it. The least he can do is actually have a professional tell us whether he's okay upstairs.
Do you want to know why they don't take the test besides the obvious one, which is that it'd be embarrassing, but it's specifically embarrassing. I sat with my father taking the neurological exam, doing the five words thing, and it was eye-opening. I've watched my father's sort of memory and especially short-term memory and various things decline over the past 5 years. And I'm not talking out of school, and he's a sweet man, just turned 85. So he is, he's younger than Biden will be if he wins re-election and serves it out to term. They ask you a bunch of questions, including like, what year is it? Mm. Right? Imagine getting that question wrong. My father happened to say, it's April 1982.
Yeah. Recently. Recently. Okay.
And that's eye-opening because when you're hanging out with your dad and like talking about the angels or whatever, you don't necessarily get that level of, oh gosh, that's a big one. Like 1982 is a lot different than 2024 or 2023 in that case. There would be something like that. I mean, look at the report that came out that they were really pissed off about the decision not to prosecute Biden. Mm-hmm. Go into the granular details of why and what were the ways that he was bringing up his son's death and getting facts and years and times wrong. We've seen him do this for a long time.
Constantly.
The cognitive test will absolutely isolate that, and there will be a specific question about a date or a time or a place, and in theory, and I would suspect it probably would happen, he will give a crazy wrong answer. And that will show people immediately, like, game's over.
It'll be the end
of his
presidency.
They'll never do it.
And, you know, it's funny, you said that about Beau Biden. And it's really interesting because the number of times he said that he died in Iraq, and people have said, well, you know, burn pits and maybe like a second order death or something. And he never says that. He says he died in Iraq. And why would you ever say something like that when it's so transparently not true? You're the president. There's a press corps out there to fact check you, and it's easily checkable. I mean, everyone knows that this is wrong.
And it gets checked.
You do that because you don't know. Maybe that is how you've internalized it. Maybe that's what it's become in your brain. And look, if you're out there in front of the assembled press, as Karine Jean-Pierre is in this clip, and someone's asking about something, as you're supposed to do as a journalist, what is going on with, what is America doing with Julian Assange? Is he going to be extradited, et cetera? They're going to give you the runaround. And they're supposed to give you the runaround. These are secrets. These are things we haven't decided, et cetera. As a democratic nation, and you have, in an almost North Korean way, a woman putting herself between the press, the free press in America, and the president, if whether or not he is cognitively capable of doing the job should be offensive to every American. Yeah. It should be offensive to every single American. It's not a partisan thing. I feel bad for the guy. I truly do. I feel bad seeing an old guy who seems like he's confused. And more than anything, I am offended by all the people that are plumping for him and saying, everything's fine. He's faster than me.
I feel bad for us.
No, I do feel bad
for us. I'm done feeling bad for him. I feel bad for us.
Yeah.
And I am angry at Dr. Jill too. I would never let this happen to my husband, and my husband would never let this happen to me. Mm. If I start to lose it on the show, eventually Doug will give me the tap on the shoulder and say, "Honey, Provence it is. Let's go."
Start.
Yeah, stars are quoted in air quotes.
He's been doing so many taps recently. He's like, "We gotta go. Get this off."
This is absurd for her to allow this. I mean, this really feels cruel, but it's mostly cruel to us because we actually have a lot of important things that Americans need help with or need the government to get out of. We need somebody sane to run the country, and we're not looking at it right now. However, he's apparently a very strong man. Just ask Howard Dean. Watch.
Haley's hope has to be that she can present herself well as an alternative to Trump so that the convention can accept her should either Trump have a health problem, which he's certainly just as likely as Biden to have, if not more. I mean, I'll bet you anything that Joe Biden could beat the daylights out of Trump in a push-up contest, for example.
Oh,
and Trump knows it too, although if it was a cheeseburger eating contest, it might turn out differently.
Okay. He's looking pretty good, Howard. Yeah. Howard, you should.
Should we play that clip?
I don't even know what to
say. The Howard clip? Like, maybe we need to see it again.
The scream?
Yeah, the scream.
Let's get the scream.
We need to see it, don't we? Let's see it.
That was a more innocent time.
Yeah. Do we have the screen clip?
Of course.
And Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Can you believe that ended a presidential career?
Yes, I can.
And yet,
yes, that was the worst scream I've ever heard. What is, went up like 9 octaves too.
Disqualifying.
I mean, do you remember when, like, making up stuff about your family and your personal academic career serially and plagiarizing another politician's life story was enough to end a presidential campaign? I remember that too. Those are good times.
That's right.
The American self-degradation just keeps going. But the two people that we're choosing from have degraded themselves so badly so many times over the years. We're just like, I mean, that's why Dr. Jill is allowing this to happen, presumably, because she has told herself, like so many Democrats have told themselves, okay, sure, he might be in very obvious cognitive decline, and we're like trying to teach him how to walk so he doesn't trip every time. But, you know, he's the only one who could beat Trump, so we got to keep him out there. It's, you know, our sense of what the country needs and needs to protect itself from means that he has to be publicly humiliated because we don't have another. That's how people justify it. And the people voting for Trump against Biden or against Democrats are kind of doing the same thing. Like, yeah, sure, he's done all of these things and he keeps doing them and he will keep doing them. But that's still better than you know, the elite swamp out there.
Mm-hmm. So don't you think the game with Biden is these Democrats are like, we just have to get to November 6th. That's it. Well, technically January 21st. Mm-hmm. We just have to get there. And then as soon as he's in, like, we don't love Kamala, but at least we'll have a Democrat as president who we control. Like, we just get him over the finish line. He doesn't have to make it another 4 years. He just have to make it past inauguration so that we deny it to evil orange man.
It's not so long ago that Joe Biden and his team were making the formal decision to run for office again. And at that time, we all had pretty much the same body of evidence with respect to his obvious cognitive decline that we do now. And they made the choice to push forward. And it's hard for me to believe that Biden was like meaningfully involved in that and making a conscious decision just because he doesn't really seem capable of it most of the time. There are moments in there where it seems like he's just slept well enough and is just medicated enough to actually perform in a moment. But it is a constant, steady diet of these clips of the man just seeing completely out of his depth in various contexts. And everyone was aware of it. And I would have expected folks like AOC from the squad, for example, to draw a line in the sand.
Correct.
Early on, and say, we need someone else to run here, but they chose politics.
But, well, in a way, it shows you their power in the media versus their actual power within the Democratic Party, which is a lot smaller than they would like it to be. But, you know, with Biden, I mean, it's funny that we talked about this the other day. The argument is essentially the argument that Democrats made about John Fetterman.
Yeah.
It was like, there was somebody, and it might have been MSNBC, but somebody significant said, you know, the senator's not doing it anyway. It's his staff.
Yeah.
That's literally an argument that was made. It's his staff. Don't worry. It can be anyone. We can put like a paper doll up there, provided the people behind him are good. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially the argument now. And that's the one that they're running with. It's no longer plausible. Like when you see Mike Barnicle.
It's like we're all out of humans in the United States.
Yeah. There's so many. And they're all better than the two options we have now. Literally all of them.
What did Mike Barnicle do?
Well, no, he said the other
day. MSNBC guy.
What you do all the time is when somebody is so clearly not in the right sort of mental shape, is that you go so hard in the other direction. Mm-hmm. So Mike Barnum was on the other day. He says he, a 45-year-old, could not do what he does.
Yeah. You should see
and that is experience. And you see this constantly on TV. These people, and again.
Green Jump here. She says, I can't keep up with him.
Yeah. I can't keep up with him.
In all these meetings that we are not. Running cameras on.
Yeah, right. Just, never seen any of them.
Well, did you see the leak last week about his sex life?
No.
Yeah.
I saw that.
I don't know if I want to.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about it last week. There's a new book out that documents how he says they have sex all the time.
These are lies.
These are obvious
Camille, lies. But he thinks it's true. It's fine.
These are lies.
Is this with his girlfriend in Alaska or
Canada? Yes.
Wow.
There's no accident that this drops now and that he somehow gave this information to this reporter. I guess he's trying to make himself look more robust, right?
Yeah. That's gonna change a few minds. I think they'll vote for him.
One thing about the Dr. Jill and what Camille was saying before that strikes me. I'm sure Biden wants to run for president, just like I'm sure my dad would have loved to keep driving.
Yes.
The olds want to keep driving.
They should not drive.
Yeah. They shouldn't. That's exactly right.
My mom, too. My mom literally drove her car into the side of a building. She's like, I'm fine. I'm like, did the other people live?
Yeah. That building wasn't there 20 years ago.
But I'm telling you, my mom, she's got word search. Sometimes she can't remember the word, but she's in so much better shape than Joe Biden. Yeah. And like, it's terrifying to me that we're about to do this. Like, I don't think he's going to win. Have you seen the last round of swing state polls that just came out?
It's disastrous, man.
Like, he hasn't been ahead in the swing state polling, like when you look at the 6 to 8 of them, in months, since November, at least. I mean, at the most recent, Trump's got all the momentum right now. I mean, if you had $1 million and you had to bet it on one, who'd you bet it on?
I mean, it's an easy choice, and that's why the Pod Save America people, a podcast I don't really understand, but it's the Obama folks are now saying the exact same thing. Like, we need to maybe call an audible here.
What?
They do.
How? What?
I don't know. But there should be some contingency in order that you're going to lose this election.
Yeah, they're going to lose.
And if you think that if he loses, if the Democrats lose, on the other side of that is the end or the failure of democracy. If you actually believe that, which I don't think they actually believe, which is why they run and fund MAGA candidates against our friend Peter Meyer in Michigan, et cetera. These people hate you. You're funding them. Why are you doing this? And this is the same thing here. If you actually believe that, you would be making a very aggressive rear guard action right now to get rid of him. However that happens, I don't know. Somebody could figure it out, I'm sure. Mm.
I think I would bet that Biden would win. If I had $1 million and I had to be forced to bet, I don't have any confidence in that.
Why?
Because there's a consistent weird thing in the polls where the people who are otherwise being polled on the presidency, high levels of independents and Democrats especially, but also some Republicans, don't believe that Trump is going to be the nominee. They still believe in the Chris Hayes fantasy that one of these things is going to wipe him out. They haven't processed the news. When they process the news, that might look different. And also the exit polls, South Carolina was consistent on this, but the other ones before among Republicans, not just voters in the primary, but self-identified Republican voters in the primary, there has been a consistently high, at least the way they're talking to pollsters right now, like, I'm not going to vote for Trump. You know, people who vote in the elections, granted, you know, they're in the process of voting for Nikki Haley. They have, let's say, different interpretations of January 6th than Trump voters tend to have. But there is a measurable never Trump contingent among the Republican electorate, which says to me that I think the ceiling of Trump is 46%. That's what he got both times.
Wait a minute, but 90% of the party came home in 2016. He was more hated.
Yes and no. I mean, I agree with you. And also his approval ratings within the party has always been around 90%. I haven't looked at that recently. But I think that there are, especially with the trials going on, I think that there is a larger never Trump rump among the Republican Party.
I don't think so. And what about RFKJ? He's going to queer the vote.
Well, that's the thing.
That's another thing.
But RFK, I think, has... it's unclear how he affects the race. Mm-hmm. I think when you put a five-way poll, which is actually going to look more like what the actual ballots look like, right? Jill Stein's going to run for the Green Party nomination. They're going to be on 35 ballots, probably something around there. Libertarians will be on 40-something. RFK will be running. Cornel West might get some too. And when you put all of them in there, they do take from Biden. But a lot of that, I think, right now is specifically Stein and West.
They love self-immolation, by the way. They love it.
They do.
Oh, yeah, they cheered really that guy right on. You go. You yep. burn. Burn, baby, burn.
Cornel West in particular, actually.
Yeah, it was absolutely disgusting. Yeah. But no, when you just put RFKJ in the mix, he takes from Biden.
He takes from both.
But he hurts. I just looked at this on a group of swing state polls where it was Trump, Biden, head-to-head. Trump was winning in all of them.
Yeah.
Then they factored in only RFKJ, and it was a bigger margin of victory for Trump.
Right. But that's not what the ballots are going to look like. If you look at the – I think that the people who are saying that they're going to vote for RFKJ are actually going to vote for one of the left-wing candidates to his left if they have the option to, mm-hmm. because they're pissed off about Israel, because they're pissed off about whatever. So – some of that is him and some of that is not him. I think in isolation, he would take more from Biden, yes, but only a little more. I think there is a contingent among his crowd who, you know, they think that Trump sold out to Pfizer. You know, he's got some like serious anti-vax people also.
No,
like,
more so than Biden.
People who want to break stuff against the wall, right? He's got that kind of energy attraction, and some of that will take from Trump.
Let me ask you this. So I don't know, like RFKJ is going to be interesting, and he's gotten the ballot on, I think, two of the swing states so far. So we'll see how many more. He's not a lock for all these ballots. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know who's going to be on the ballot. It's one of the weird things. Like, we're not sure how many of those five are actually going to make the ballots. But I do think that the Democrats have a better get out the vote machine by far. And you heard Trump just the other day with Laura Ingraham in that town hall on Fox News mm-hmm. saying, don't mail in ballot.
Yeah.
He's insane. Mm-hmm. Camille, you tell me how the Republicans are supposed to win an election without doing mail-in ballots, given the change. I know they don't like the change, mm-hmm. but the change has happened. And this is how the Democrats have been winning.
Yeah.
2022 special elections, and now we're rolling into 2024. And you've got the party leader saying, don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I formally have bowed out of making any sort of election predictions since Donald Trump won the nomination the first go-around.
Humility.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's likely to happen. I will say that the RNC has been a complete shambles, and Donald Trump's recent decision to help put one of his family members in a position of leadership there, I don't think that's necessarily going to help. It'll certainly mean that they're all playing the same game and singing from the same sheet music.
Gonna help
whether
legal
or not
defense.
Operationally they'll be in a better position than the Democrats is not quite clear. This does seem like it's going to be another contempt election more than it is enthusiasm for Joe Biden, and in some respects, even enthusiasm for Trump. I mean, if I have to look at whether or not enthusiasm for Trump or contempt for Trump is likely to play a bigger role in the next election, it's hard for me to know which way that breaks. Mm. And it certainly seems like the contempt is really there and could be an animating factor that gets people to come out to the polls in a way that maybe another 4 years of Donald Trump aren't as interesting to someone who's MAGA inclined, but not particularly excited about the choice between these two particular men.
If he stays quiet over the next year.
But let me
bring it into what happened in Michigan. So let's see. Trump won Michigan in the primary, 68%. Haley got 26.6%, uncommitted, 3%. Biden won 81%. Uncommitted got 13.2%, which is 101,000 votes. He got 623,000 votes. And I've heard about 10,000 discussions. I got to be honest, none of which I find particularly interesting because it's just so early. I don't know, like about what this means. Mm-hmm. You know, like Nikki Haley got 26%. That's 300,000 in Michigan who didn't want Trump. Does it mean that they mm-hmm. won't turn out for Trump? Trump only won Michigan by 11,000. Anything could happen. And then on the Biden, like that uncommitted 13% of the vote. It's angry leftists who don't like the Israel policy. Should he change the Israel policy? Whatever. Can we glean anything out of Michigan? Did you guys see anything
of
interest?
They're often angry conservatives. They're angry Muslim conservatives in Dearborn. Mm. They're not leftists in any way. They're, mm-hmm. they're single issue voters
one issue.
On this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as significant as people thought it was going to be. I mean, 100, yeah, it's a lot of people. But I mean, this is the thing that people are using this, and you see this a lot in the media, on the left to try to move the administration. Mm. You understand you're going to lose the election. There's not a lot of evidence of this, but you lose the election unless you force Israel to do X or Y, which obviously also presumes that Israel doesn't make its own decisions,
right.
that America
mm-hmm.
does. There's something almost anti-Semitic about it. Like there's this Jewish conspiracy in America that controls the Jews over there.
Right.
But the thing about the Haley stuff is take Haley out of it. She is like, Haley is irrelevant. She is an irrelevance, but
I'll say this. When we talk so frequently, less so now, but we used to talk frequently about the split in the Democratic Party amongst progressives. The squad was important. They were punching above their weight. Younger generations, more progressive, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The conservative and the Republican version of that is those 300,000 votes. I don't see them as Haley votes. I see them as conservatives of the old school votes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of those people.
And
that
we still love that party.
They want the Reagan party.
Yeah.
And that's not the Trump party. A lot of them will hold their nose and vote for Trump. A lot of them won't vote. Some maybe even vote for RFK. And there's a contingent of people who will vote for RFK, by the way, because they are deeply low information voters. They don't know anything about him other than, like, there's a Kennedy on the ticket.
I object. We have our ongoing battle over him.
What?
He's misunderstood.
No, I think that people will vote for a Kennedy. There's a certain amount of people who vote for a Kennedy.
But I think most of his fans like the fact that he doesn't like anti-vax, but that he definitely called BS on some of the lies that we were told about COVID vaccines very early on, that he's taken on the medical industrial complex, that he's taken on the intelligence and military industrial complex. He's extremely smart and well-studied. I mean, like, he's got 10,000 statistics on any subject for you. And he seems, I think, to a lot of people like a truth teller. I know you think that's just an act.
But he can talk about any issue in a way that
neither Trump nor Biden can do. Never mind Cornel West and Jill Stein.
No, he projects a kind of competence. And whether or not you agree with his perspective on vaccines, he will certainly level an argument and do it in a way that sounds very sophisticated and is rich with data that one will probably ignore and just say, yeah, no, he said it. There is a number in there and it must be true. How many Americans will that persuade? Probably a meaningful amount.
He's not going to win, but he's a player.
I think to Michael's point, if you look at all of the polling of favorability ratings, he's dominating the field
by a lot.
And I believe that he's dominating the field because his name is Robert F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he's dominating the field because people are like, I really agree with what he said about, the vote in Ohio in 2004.
Have you looked to see whether he has mostly older support or younger support?
I don't have a breakdown.
I feel like only the older people would be like the Kennedys, and I think the younger people too.
But there's also a lot of the instinct, because so much of voting is just a feeling, right? It's a feeling you have about somebody. And there's so much of it that captures what Trump captured in 2016. He doesn't give a shit. He says middle finger to all the institutions. He'll take on all of them because he's a billionaire. This was the argument. A lot of people made this argument. Like, he doesn't care. He doesn't need them. He doesn't need the money from all of these big corporations. The version of that with Bobby Kennedy, as you pointed out, is like he takes on, the medical industrial complex, Pfizer, the vax makers, everybody under the sun.
The media.
And he's gone hard. And he just doesn't give a shit because he's a Kennedy. He has the money he has. He's married to the woman from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty good life. And he's doing this in a selfless way. He doesn't need this.
Well, that's true. I don't know how wealthy he is.
It's hard.
I do think he's truly committed to these causes. Like, that's the reason. 100%. It was, 2 years ago, he couldn't get on any TV show, any podcast. You know, we put him on and we did an in-depth challenge of all of his assertions on the vaccine and all this stuff. It was a very interesting deep dive for me because we have no dog in that hunt. It was like, is he a liar? Is he full of shit on everything?
Mm-hmm.
And sure, there were some things when we kicked the tires fell off. But I'm telling you, on most of the things, the tires stayed on. And I was like, oh, I'm learning a lot. I didn't go full conspiratorial on everything that he says. I know that's the knock on him. But the man actually has some real science to back it up. And then we called his critics. In the medical community, his critics. And we said, give us all the ammo. And we double checked those sources. And anyway, the net of it was, he is not as full of shit on this stuff as his critics believe. That was my independent takeaway.
Okay. I'm hearing a Megyn Kelly veep slot.
It's an endorsement too. Yeah. She just endorsed him.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to Michigan. That brings me to your friends on The View. They had a testy argument over what happened on the uncommitted, mad about the uncommitted votes, or at least some of them are.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they getting behind Joe Biden? Why are these 100,000 defecting? Let's watch.
You're in danger of seeming like a one-issue voter. But to have a non-committed vote for me is hard, because I know how hard people fought to get the right to have their voices heard.
There are 300,000 of the Arab population in Michigan, and Trump carried Michigan in 2016 by about 11,000 votes. They are telling you this issue matters here. The suffering in Gaza is first and foremost due to Hamas.
But there is suffering.
There is suffering. But my point here is Biden heard everyone. He gets it. The thing he's doing is not reverse electing himself by saying, what do you want? I'm going to go do that. Some of it is, I know what's right here, and I'm going to stand true to that, even in an election year.
If he does not get Michigan because of this,
then those protesters will get Trump.
There are women that vote single issue. There are evangelicals that vote single
issue. And we kvetch at
them
every time.
There are African Americans that vote single issue. So this is no different.
Okay. So
that was actually kind of good.
So it wasn't bad. Then they had the Sarah Haynes trying to do the more conservative take on it. But you tell me whether it's a wise move for Joe Biden to change his Israel policy because of what happened in Michigan.
That is the most significant part of this. It's not like the harbinger, what's going to happen in the election, how important are these votes. What matters is the way that the Biden administration, I think it has been even before the vote and now afterwards, is internalizing that. They are worried stiff about young voters. If you look at a public opinion polls, attitudes towards Israel and Gaza and Mideast policy, it is the 18 to 29 year olds are here and the entire rest of the country is over here in an opposite place. There's like something like a half of that young electorate thinks like a fundamental problem is that Israel exists. That's not an exaggeration. It's weird. It's like so strong. They primarily identify with the Palestinians as opposed to Israelis. Americans are not like that. We're the rest of them who are not 18 to 29 don't tend to think that way. So because the youth vote has been so since Obama, so such a reliable turnout for Democrats and so overwhelmingly Democratic, which it really wasn't until Biden, Obama. I'm doing a Trump here.
that's normal. So forget a name here or there is human. Totally what's happening with our president is not. Anyway, keep going.
So you can see the sort of flop sweat among the Biden administration in dealing with Israel policy right now. Like they really want a sped up timetable. Why? What's happening soon that you're really worried about? Is it the length of the war and the humanitarian crisis? Yes, it is that. But there's also other things. There's an election, and you can hear you worrying about that. Right now, the administration is being very insistent with Netanyahu, like we have to have a vision, a post-war vision of a two-state solution. That is American politics. That is not the reality on the ground in Israel, including among Palestinians in Gaza or the West Bank.
And Gaza.
There isn't.
It's dead.
The two-state solution, there isn't. I mean, the people who are the most in favor of the two-state solution in Israel will say that it's dead and they don't want a two-state solution right now. What Israelis want right now is to get the hostages back primarily, but also after they get the hostages back is to never feel that sense of insecurity ever again. Yeah. And how the state is formed as part of that question, okay, we'll get to that, but they don't have the sense of getting to that. The Biden administration, like in fairness, most American administrations of the past 30, 40 years, they just have two-state solution printed on their brain plate, and they're pushing it. I think one of the reasons why Biden is pushing it is he's worried about Michigan, he's worried about young voters, and he's worried about Arab Americans.
Well, the odds of these people voting Trump are slim. Exactly. He's not, but the odds of them staying home are real.
I mean,
by the way, just today on my phone, I got one of those news alerts from ABC News saying 30,000 dead in Gaza per the Gaza Ministry of Health. They're still citing them after humiliating themselves with that hospital bombing. Like, still, we've learned not to trust this organization.
There was a number of people that very tragically died today in a swarm of Gazan civilians on an aid convoy, and they were open fired on by IDF troops. So I was told, then I saw the Israelis pushing back on that. I don't know what's true. It very well could be that everyone who died there today was killed by the Israelis. They could have had a good reason for it. They could have had a bad reason for it. But to see the media again this morning, and I listened to it on NPR and various other sources, just going directly into it again.
Yep.
And while citing the Gaza Ministry of Health, which of course has no interest in maximizing its casualties. Like, look, you know, Zelensky, and I'm unlike a lot of people that I think listen to our podcast, I'm a pretty strong supporter of the Ukrainians. And when they said 30,000, 33,000 dead, it's like, that's a fraction of what it is. I know he's lying too. Mm-hmm. I know the Russians are lying too. Mm-hmm. Everybody lies about this stuff. But I have had people tell me, academics, one very famous academic actually in this said, I believe everything that they say.
Rashid,
Rashid Khalidi from Colombia. I believe that I know the people there. You don't know them. I know them personally. They wouldn't lie about this stuff.
How they get the hospital bombings
around. This is what, yes. I mean, like this kind of stuff. And look, as this relates to the Democratic Party, I mean, it was, I don't remember what the exact number was, a pretty low turnout for Democrats in Michigan. So that's also something to consider too. But if you're going to rest American foreign policy, and American foreign policy, which has been a very steady American foreign policy since 1948, on potentially losing this small segment of people in Virginia, you deserve to lose. You should not be, you know, trying to speed up a solution. You try to speed up a solution because you want those hostages to come out alive. Mm-hmm. And look, nobody wants any civilians there to die. I certainly hope they don't. In that, but the political calculations here and talking about them always feels very gross to me.
And you know what the worst is? You know, Joe Biden doesn't, he's on Team Israel. I really believe he is.
He's
just saying these latest things about like, oh, they've gone too far to appease his staff, which is all these young woke White House interns that releases a memo to the press every time they have some sort of sit-in.
Anonymous memo.
Right.
Too,
right. So it's like,
brave people.
Wear masks.
Yeah. They have some sort of effector. Yeah. And so I know you really want to talk about Chris Cuomo, and we're going to do that. We're going to do that next, right? We're going to take a quick break, are we? Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with the guys from the Fifth Column. Don't go away.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are, no car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 422 through 428. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra-large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
It's leap day, which is exciting. We only get leap day every 4 years. And I had originally planned on taking this day off and having my kids take this day off and just to go do all the things that like we've never done. You know, like I've never taken my kids to the 9/11 museum. I really would like to take my kids to the 9/11. Just stuff that like you always say you're going to do, but then you don't do.
Yeah.
And then I realized like it's a school day for everybody. I have to work. There's a lot going on. My kids, this is like exam week at my older son. Like you can't, right? So one idea that my hairstylist thought was maybe between now when I go watch my daughter and her play this evening, I could go skydiving. I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. Does anyone have an idea on something we could do?
Skydiving?
I've never done it. It's something I wouldn't normally do.
Did she say like get a neck tattoo next or something?
She said she did it and there was a Navy SEAL on her back and she really enjoyed that.
Yeah, she wasn't talking about skydiving. you just made that about skydiving.
Sarah!
I don't know. Like, maybe you could do, like, I think that after this, we're going to day drink.
Yeah.
We'll probably just get some drinks during the day.
Right
I don't know if you've ever done that with your kids. Might be worth a try.
I didn't hear that the kids had to be involved.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, is it just you? Is it just you or the kids?
Maybe just Doug could take him to the 9/11 museum.
Exactly.
I
think that we'd all be interested in visiting your masseuse, as described earlier.
Discussed earlier. Good Lord.
That's a good day for that.
I don't even know. What to do? I don't know. I've been solo co-parenting for a week, and I have another one left. So I'm just thinking every day, what do I do?
Yeah.
I'm not very good at it.
How old are your kids?
I have one, and she just turned 13.
Okay.
And she talks with her friends in the back of the car going to school this morning like she's 25.
Yes.
And writes for National Review or something. I didn't know any of this. That's like, that's the secret conversation. They don't think I can hear. Like,
yes.
I'm an Uber driver who only speaks Georgian or something. I'm just like, how do they not know that I'm hearing all of this?
Oh my God. Doug and I were in the back of a car one time, and this is embarrassing for Doug, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Poor Dugger. And he says it to me, like, he gives me a look, and I'm like, what? I didn't know what he was trying to signal. And he literally spelled out S-E-X.
What? Sorry, huh? What?
I'm like, the driver can spell? What are you saying?
What? Was he trying... He was trying to get it on in the cab?
No, he was like making a plan for later. He's letting me know.
Is that how you guys negotiate?
No.
He pushes the paperwork over. He's like, I'm thinking about 8:30 tonight.
Do you consent?
You can talk to your
I guess he thought he communicated what he wanted to do when we got there with his eyes, but I didn't get it. But he felt the need to spell it.
I mean, she's a lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, the presumption is they don't know what that is.
Right, so you don't have any greater leap day plans than I do. But let's take a look. Let's check in with Chris Cuomo. Because yeah. I think we might find some sort of inspirational thoughts from his podcast. Let's take a listen.
What if I told you that I know something that can absolutely change your perspective on your own life and greatly increase your ability to deal with whatever comes your way? And here's a little inside tip. Everything that comes your way is the same. The art of acquiescence, as understood by Marcus Aurelius and taught by the great Stoics, okay? Whether it's Seneca or Epictetus, I mean, many great minds. I'm going to be haunted by what I did in the past. It's going to change everything. Uh-huh. It'll never be better. I can't fix it. I'll never get the job. She'll never stay with me. He doesn't really like me. This isn't going to be what I needed it to be. I'm going to fail. All of those things, right? My kid's not going to get into school. They're not going to be smart. They're not going to be popular, right? Whatever it is. I'm fat. I'm never going to get in shape.
Whatever it is, we get it.
They all boil down to the same things. Kung Fu Panda said it brilliantly. It was actually Sifu. No, it was actually the turtle. Master... Master Oogway.
Oh, man.
The past... is history, the future, a mystery, but today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. Genius! Fucking loved it.
Oh!
Okay. All
wow.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, America's shittiest guru. Good Lord. Well, today was yesterday. And yesterday is tomorrow. It's like, what is he talking about?
The Kung Fu Panda bit, he lost me for a little
bit. Yeah, for a second.
But I like the mindfulness, like the present moment.
What are
you? You should have never started smoking pot. This has been a
problem. Like Sam Harris.
You could blame Sam Harris.
Oh,
this is waking up.
This is.
And it's life affirming.
Yeah, but he does
a better job than Chris Cuomo. And he never mentioned Kung Fu Panda.
He doesn't make any sense. And, you know, by the way, it's an embarrassment to the Italian Americans, you know, because I have a little bit of that in me, and the Cuomos are really just doing a bad job.
This is not acceptable.
But his, like, the list of things, which he's just a bad broadcaster, it's like, I know you're in your house, but, like, there's people listening.
Yeah.
Why was the list so long?
No, it was all
about his life.
No one has ever needed
like,
a co-host
I got no turkey,
more.
And I was trying to make a sandwich, for instance. And then Seneca said, I'm like, okay, fucking Wikipedia. someone just Googled this beforehand. I can swear, right?
Yes, I'm serious. A little late to be asking that one.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm bad.
You just started the show. Right?
There was a lot in there. So God bless Chris Cuomo. Hope it all works out.
You should get him on. You should ask him to come on.
A date.
Stop it right now. We've got to talk about Willy Wonka. Believe it or not, did you see there's news about Willy Wonka?
Mm-hmm.
A Willy Wonka inspired experience in Glasgow, Scotland turned out to be a scam.
Mm. Yes.
So apparently they were promised, people were, extraordinary props, oversized lollipops, and a paradise of sweet treats, all promoted with dream-like candy-colored images on the website. When, quoting here from NBC News, when ticket holders arrived at the event over the weekend, they instead found a sparsely decorated warehouse with nothing resembling the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory franchise the event invoked in its advertising. Look at the pictures of what they actually saw when they went to their Willy Wonka themed event. Stand by. Can you put it on the big screen so they can see it? They can, only I can see it in the camera.
I can defend this.
It looks like prison.
You cannot defend this. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
Use your imagination.
Yeah. Fill out
the room. Yeah.
Oh, and that's exciting.
Wonka makes you joyful and hopeful. This makes you depressed.
I mean, it's a prison. But also, so does Glasgow. It's great. It's like that's a great Willy Wonka. He's going to be in there and like, that is
what is that?
Look at the website.
What is that?
They had to call the police because the ticket holders were so pissed that it was a bait and switch. Look how depressing that is. Let me tell you something.
Angry Scottish
little story for you guys. A story time for with MK again. Okay. And it was almost 4 years ago now. It was 2020. We were during the COVID pandemic. We had just launched the show and I was turning 50. And for my 50th birthday, my team booked Charlie Bucket and Veruca Salt, the real ones. Peter Ostrom and Julie Don Cole came on this show because they know I love Willy Wonka. Love Charlie and Chocolate Factory. I love the book. I love the movie. I love it all. And it was the first and only interview of my life where I literally burst into tears before I asked a single question.
I
was so overwhelmed. It's a long story. Anyway, so Julie Don Cole, Veruca Salt says to me, "What are you doing for your 50th birthday?" I'm like, "Oh, I can't travel. It's COVID." She was like, "Well, when you decide to travel, please come over here to London and we'll watch the movie together." It happened.
Wait, you did?
I did it.
Oh my God.
And I stayed at this beautiful hotel, which I highly recommend you. It's called the Brown Hotel. And look at this. They made a little Wonka room just through Abigail Finan, my assistant, which was better than the one in Glasgow. Yeah. This is just a hotel room that they put together for Julie Don Cole to come over. And we sat there, she and I and my whole family, and we watched the movie together and we sang together. And I'm going to show you just a little clip.
Oh my Lord.
Here, watch.
That's when I fell down. Bless the wine of man. She seems amazing just from that shot.
She was awesome.
She's amazing.
She called up an Oompa Loompa. We spoke to the head Oompa Loompa.
That's
the real Wonka experience. I'm sorry, but those poor people in Glasgow had no idea what they were saying.
That's amazing. Oh, I've got so many follow-up questions, but we don't have enough time on the Megyn Kelly show. But wow. Did you cry with her too while you guys were guzzling the vino?
It was a little teary, but it was mostly joyful. Yeah. It was great because
did you pay her for this?
She offered. I took her up on it. I'm sure she wasn't thinking I was actually going to do it. I'm like, "I'm here with my whole family. Can you please come over?" She's like, "Sure."
That mad American woman say,
She was so nice. And I have to say, she's no spring chicken. And my son got COVID. This is still in the height of COVID mania, like I say. And it was early 21 or late 20 when we actually made it over there. And I'm like, I had to tell her. I'm like, "Oh, my son has COVID. Do you mind?" She's like, "I don't care." She's like, "No problem." She goes, "Just keep him on the other side of the room. We're good." She came. We drank. We danced. We sang.
That is amazing.
It was a dream come true. You guys, sometimes dreams really do come true. But not if your name is Prince Harry. Oh. That's what we're ending it. All my cast of favorites.
Every time.
Harry lost his big legal battle over in the UK to get them to pay for his security. He's pissed because when he left the royal family, they were like, "You left the royal family. Goodbye. We're not paying for police coverage for you anymore." So he sued. And in his pleadings, where he just lost, but the judge released this in his decision saying, "You're not getting this paid for." He said, "I want the name of the person who denied me the security." Like, what's he going to do? What is Prince Harry going to do to this person? The entitlement and disgusting obsession with oneself and his fake security concerns. I'm sorry, but he just got paid $100 million from Netflix. He can afford his own security.
Hire a security dude.
And he said, "I need to know the name of the guy who did this." And I thought that was just speculation. And I read the story and it was actually in the ruling, which is crazy. And I kept on thinking, what is he going to do? Bore him to death? Like just sitting in front, like, "My wife is really a drag, I don't know what he's going to do." But like the security thing is
kind of bullshit in certain ways, right? The paparazzi's aggressive, and I understand that. But the narrative that you always get is that his mother was killed by the paparazzi. His mother was killed by a drunk driver. And Henri something or whatever, but he had a double the legal limit and crashed. Were there paparazzi behind him? Yeah, but I think if he was sober, that wouldn't have happened. But that's been respun by everyone, like these horrible paparazzi. This is the life I have to lead. I'm getting paid $100 million by Netflix, despite having literally no talent and being a ginger. That's the second part is not, it's just me. That's
it's
me.
Forgivable.
Yeah, that's only my only thing. But it's like, you have a talentless family, and yet you're, and you're, the incredible thing is about somebody who just got the $100 million or whatever it was from Netflix to go to England where you do not live and say, and for a family that you've made a separation from, and say, the taxpayers of England should pay for this.
Crazy. Right. Yeah. The entitlement. Dude, and seriously? there is no threat by paparazzi. They made up their fake car chase in New York, as you know. Even their Netflix special showed, they're like, oh, he's following us. It was one guy on a Vespa. Yeah. Literally. Yeah. You're going to get more when you leave Sirius XM, you three.
Yeah.
It's sir.
I think it was Matt Stone.
Like, you left your wallet. He's following us. Get out now. They love me. Idiot.
God. You're pretty good with the impressions,
yeah,
buddy.
No, I try my best. Yeah.
Can you give us your Larry Flint that you gave us during the commercial break?
No, my God, are you serious?
Yes, dude, it's really good.
You have any idea how many organizations will write in and be like, Larry Flint? Yeah, they just can't.
Okay, no.
But hey, what a weird impression to Larry Flint.
I don't know.
A dead pornographer.
Okay. It's in your repertoire.
It's in my repertoire, it is.
You guys, that was super fun. I feel like it's a standing now in person here at a Sirius XM.
Let's do it. In person and also every February 29th.
Yes. Yeah, you're on. Hopefully not until, not, we will do it before then. Yeah. Okay. They're going to go drink and I might join them. Maybe that'll be my thing. Let me know what your thing is. Email me, Megan at MeganKelly.com with your leap day plans. Would love to hear. Back tomorrow with two episodes. We're going to do a live one at noon. And then we're going to come back after the closing arguments in the Fannie Willis case, with which I am obsessed. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda. And no fear.
Having a teen feels like having your own live-in influencer. Somehow you know the latest makeup trend and the fact that skinny jeans are not the most flattering pants. Now it's time for you to show them what's up, thanks to Domino's. From April 22nd through April 28th, carry out as many large two-topping pizzas from Domino's as you want for only $6.99 each. And teach your kiddo that saving money and Domino's pizza will never go out of style. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.